welcome to a special Microbiology Today issue of Microbe Talk. In today's episode, we're going to be celebrating the legacy of winners of the Microbiology Society's Fleming Prize to complement this October's special 75th anniversary issue of Microbiology Today. As part of our 75th anniversary celebrations, the Microbiology Society planned a Fleming Showcase to celebrate the legacy of past Fleming Prize winners and to examine some of the most exciting science from around the globe. The Microbiology Society's Fleming Prize is awarded each year to an early career researcher who has achieved an outstanding research record within 12 years of being awarded their PhD. As part of this showcase, we spoke with a number of past winners of the Fleming Prize for a series of short films. We discussed a range of topics during these interviews, including their research, what winning the prize meant to them, and how it has impacted their career. One thing that really stood out was how far microbiology has come over the past 30 years. Professor Douglas Kell, who was awarded the prize in 1986, reflected on the challenges of research before recent advances in genome sequencing.
We're really interested predominantly in how the individual parts of a system control the emergent properties of the system, how it grows, how it reproduces, how fluxes are controlled through it, and indeed the title of my Fleming lecture was Forces, Fluxes, and the Control of Microbial Growth and Metabolism. All of this, of course, was pre-genomic, so we were kind of fighting in the dark for much of this. We knew something about metabolic pathways, but not everything. We had very little control over the ability to manipulate the genes of such organisms in those days. And we didn't have anything like the sensitivity of the analytical apparatus, such as mass spectrometers in particular, that we do now. Omics was a distant dream. That's all very much changed, of course. What hasn't changed is the questions we want to ask. What has changed is our ability to answer them. I now do have a metabolic map of the entirety of E. coli and yeast and many other model organisms, including Yarrowia, another one we're working on. I do have the ability to measure all the metabolites. In fact, in 1998, I co-invented the word metabolome with Steve Oliver and a couple of other people. And mass spectrometers are now something like 1,000 times more sensitive than they were back then, so I can accurately measure all of the concentrations of metabolites in microbial samples.
He was not alone in reflecting on the early days of genomic research, with Professor Chris Higgins, who was awarded the prize the following year in 1986, discussing the research he published in the journal Nature, and it was just pages and pages of nucleotide sequences.
Oh yes, just the early days of microbiology and how different they were from now. So when I published my first sort of big paper on ABC transporters, that was done when I was at the University of California. And not many people believe it now, but a whole page of Nature was A's, G's, C's and T's. This was probably one of the longest contiguous pieces of DNA sequence that anyone had obtained at the time. And it was difficult. It was about 2 years of work. I did the sequencing off the original handwritten protocol from Alan Maxim, as in Maximum Gilbert. Borrowed some restriction enzymes from Herb Boyer at UCSF. And every new postdoc who went into the department in Berkeley had to make a new restriction enzyme because you couldn't buy most of them. And so we had to make our own radio-labeled CTP because all these things weren't available. They weren't available commercially at the time, or they were just becoming. So it was really very exciting to be right in at the beginning of that. But people nowadays don't believe how long it took to do bits of DNA sequence, for example, and how important they were. And as I say, seeing a whole page of Nature with just A's, G's, C's and T's is beyond most young scientists' comprehension.
Professor Charles Dorman, who was awarded the prize in 1994, discussed the future of microbiology and why it is such a vital area of research.
So I am a professor of microbiology. I have run a department of microbiology for a quarter of a century. It has the name Department of Microbiology over the door. That's becoming rare. And the question for us is, does that matter? I think it does matter. I think disciplinary identity is important if you're going to have continuity, because why would a student want to sign up to study something that's becoming amorphous and hard to define? So microbiology matters at the moment. It's going to matter more in the future. And one of the challenges for microbiology is preserving its unique identity and attracting very, very good people to it. And it's going to have to do that in competition with a lot of other very attractive scientific disciplines.
This sentiment was shared by Dr. Sarah Colthurst, who we got to speak to at the Microbiology Society's annual conference in 2019, the year after she gave her 2018 Fleming Prize lecture.
Microbiology matters in so many ways. There are so many important things to do with microbiology, whether it's from disease, helping disease, curing disease, preventing disease, through to biotechnology of all kinds. You know, it's not all just about health and disease. We've got agriculture, we've got environmental issues, right through to the fact that microbiology has led to such amazingly important tools, right from PCR at the beginning through to CRISPR, as we've heard a lot of at this meeting. So microbes are everywhere and microbes do everything.
Others reflected on where their passion for science came from, like Professor Peter Finneran, who won the prize in 2019.
So I sort of was quite interested in science when I was younger, but I guess like a lot of kids, you kind of go on and off it. But I had a really, really inspiring teacher who made us do really cool sort of experiments and things. So rather than like looking in a book, he would make us do things like have a mouse trap and say, you know, how far can you make a car travel powered by a mouse trap? And so, you know, these were really fun things to kind of engage you. And it didn't seem like you were, you know, doing science, but you're actually like playing around. So I think he was really inspirational. And then I sort of got really interested in biology at high school and sort of following on from that. But I think it was actually at university when I really started to realize that microbiology was kind of the thing I liked. And I think what I liked about it the most was it was just such a simple sort of system. So you could very easily, you know, manipulate it to then answer questions, whereas like things in bigger organisms get a lot more tricky. It was actually during my undergraduate that I got interested or heard about quorum sensing, so you know the ability of bacteria to talk to each other, and I thought that was really cool. Right? So that is really what made me realize that I wanted to work on quorum sensing and go and do a PhD, and that's how I ended up in Cambridge working with George Salmond, because he had worked a lot on quorum sensing in the past. And so I was fortunate to get funding from the New Zealand government to go to Cambridge and then get my PhD there.
Peter was not alone in travelling around the world for their research. In 1988, Fleming winner Professor Gordon Dugan moved to California for a while before returning to the UK to work in industry.
So I've been a scientist since the mid-70s, early 70s. I did an undergraduate and PhD around genetics. And on my PhD, I moved into microbiogenetics with a guy called Dave Sherritt, who is a brilliant innovator, really, around looking at small plasmids led into the cloning era. And then I actually went to the US to do a postdoc, which is very, you know, informative in terms of just expanding my vision about how I could apply what I'd already learned in a more direct way, particularly looking at infectious diseases. I then became a lecturer very early on in Trinity College Dublin. I spent 5 years as a lecturer, and I was headhunted into industry, which I wasn't sure it was going to be a good idea, but I actually benefited enormously from learning in industry how to make medicines, particularly vaccines. Spent 10 years in industry. And from then I've been through university. I was at the Imperial. I went to the Sanger Institute in Cambridge, where I was head of pathogens for about 12 years, and now I'm settling back into a chair in Cambridge in medicine.
It was great to learn about the variety of pathways that the Fleming winners have had during their careers. Professor Ian Roberts, who won the prize in 1994, discussed some of the challenges he faced working in academia.
Examples of where I'd wish to know more was understanding the nature of the decision-making process in universities. And that actually that pathway is a pathway that is like walking through a forest. There are pitfalls along the way. And if you don't know that, if you're fairly naive and innocent, you embark on that pathway thinking it's going to be very straightforward. Actually, often the route can be quite tortuous and can involve using skills, interpersonal skills and so on, that you need to refine if you're going to be an effective member within the university at the level of a professor. And also, I think going from a relatively small, intimate university to a large university, which is Manchester's a fantastic university, but going to a large university also came with the challenge, of course, that now you were in a much bigger operation, and so therefore learning how to be effective in that operation to support microbiology within that organisation was a steep learning curve.
We also had a chance to discuss the microbiological research that these scientists were awarded the prize for. Professor David Granger, who was awarded the prize in 2016, for his group's unexpected discovery of unusual DNA sequences, which have both positive and negative effects in the cell.
We were looking at one of these regions of DNA, and it was behaving very strangely, and we started pulling at that thread, and actually we never answered the questions that we originally set out to, because we like stumbled on this weird phenomenon that we realised was actually really widespread, and there were lots of bits of DNA that was behaving like this, so yeah.
Meanwhile, Professor Greg Challis, who was awarded the prize in 2007, was using microorganisms to develop new drug products.
The traditional approach to discovering microbial natural products relies on screening for biological activity in culture extracts. And if you find an interesting biological activity, then you would fractionate the extract and then eventually purify the molecule that has the biological activity and determine its structure. The approach that we started to develop in the late 90s and the early 2000s was based on two things. One, their microbial genome sequencing was becoming cheaper and more accessible. And two, our understanding of the mechanisms in cells used to assemble these structurally complex natural products was really improving a lot. And so we were able to take those two ideas and put them together and say, well, can we find examples of new pathways in genome sequences that aren't correlated with known metabolites of a particular organism? And could they have the potential to direct the production of novel metabolites?
1999 prize winner Professor David Richardson's research focuses on anaerobic microbes, which are important for a number of biological processes.
So I study bacterial respiration, and particularly how bacteria respire in environments where there's no oxygen, and the flexible way in which they adapt their metabolism to take advantage of lots of different forms of respiration when there's no oxygen around. So I called it respiratory flexibility in a changing environment, and enables bacteria to occupy so many different ecological niches on our planet. And those sort of bacteria are very important in driving many biogeochemical cycles, like the nitrogen cycle, the carbon cycle, the iron cycle. So, you know, they're critical to a balanced biogeochemistry of the planet. They can be important in producing greenhouse gases, consuming greenhouse gases. They're important in our guts, where there's no oxygen and lots of what we call anaerobic metabolism.
And finally, Professor Tracy Palmer, who was awarded the Fleming Prize in 2002, along with collaborator Ben Barks. Tracy explained why teamwork is so important in scientific research, and why open science is great for progress.
Whereas now I think team science is much more acceptable. We know science is done in big teams, and open science is much more acceptable as well. And I think preprinting is a fantastic idea to get science out there, so that we're no longer competing, we're taking advantage of each other's data and helping each other and facilitating the research going forward, rather than just being in a competitive and a what have you done, what have they done sort of environment. So I think that's a really big improvement, and I wish I'd known that that would change.
I hope that you've enjoyed this episode. Check out the first film with Professors Tracy Palmer, David Richardson and Peter Finneran on our YouTube channel. And keep an eye out for more films with the other winners in the coming months. You can hear from some of our other Fleming Prize winners in the October issue of Microbiology Today. I will leave a link in the podcast description below. Thanks for listening to Microbe Talk.